Only orphan animals are allowed at the circus. Orphan clowns, their tears are real. That's what I'm saying to you. So anyway, so I go to this place.
Did you guys put acid in my water? Because I am not following what's going on anymore. And I think it might be just me.
Hi, everybody. People are starting to yell outside of our window, so that means it's time for Sneaky Dragon. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
And over here we have a first-time guest here, but long-time guest on other better podcasts, Ben Mills.
Hey, everybody. I don't know about better. That's subjective, Ian. Thanks for having me down.
Yeah, you've played the good rooms, and now we're going on tour, and we're that remote bar in a town called Prince or Fort that you booked this gig. It wasn't originally on the tour schedule, but, you know, you got a day to kill, so why not make $100? No one wants to see you there. We got to shut down the pool tables. Everyone's angry.
But then eventually you grow a soft spot for Fort Prince, and then you think back on it fondly. And you're like, yeah, their transit system was above par.
Good for them. You know, the mayor really did get his act together after he got off meth.
their transit system, wasn't it just two cabs? Isn't that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like one of them is just a guy named John Cab.
He'll give piggyback rides.
Ah, the great-grandson, or great-great-great-great-grandson of John Cabot. So he shortened his name. Yeah, anglicized
and
it.
And he was remembered best by being forced to drive a cab. I was like, it's a small town. It's like Richard Scarry, right? His name's John Cab.
Richard Scarry.
That's right. Oh, he drove over Lowly Worm.
I'm so glad someone said Scarry.
What do people normally say?
I don't know. Because I was always like, is it Scarry? Is it Scarry?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I didn't do even the smallest amount of research.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you. It'll be scary because say you're a kid's author. Yeah. Are you going to go with the obvious thing or are you going to go a fancy word? Bullshit. You're going to go with the obvious one because kids have to read your name.
It's when you're a kid's author, that's the name you want, right? Chester Terrify, Richard Scarry. Those are perfect names for a kid's author.
Yeah. Franklin Molester. Although, not a great name. Didn't do great.
Scarry is not so... Chester Molester. That would be the...
I think that's been done. Wow. Oh. Yeah. The only character I can remember from those books is Lowly Worm.
Is that the one that drove an apple car?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he had a little hat, and you didn't know how he did any of the things that he did. How did he put his hat on? There's no way he could have done any of the things that he did. I think he might have had a bow tie. That's ridiculous. That can't happen at all.
Maybe he had friends that helped him out, dressed him.
Those are way ahead of my time, because the books I had were like the word books, where it was just like a picture of a house, and then everything in the house had a word. You know what I mean? So it was like door, fireplace, spoon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, that's all it is.
Yeah, it's just like a labeling of inanimate objects.
But it's fascinating. Oh, yeah. As a child, you just spend hours poring over things that are named.
Yeah, no. In fact, like, it would be fascinating now. I forgot those existed. It was like an awkward pause. Like, oh, think of something witty. I'm like, oh, my childhood.
We do talk about childhood a bit on this show. The drinking game is you either take a drink when we talk about our childhood or when a siren goes by.
What happens if both happen at the same time?
Do some heroin.
What happens if I think about a moment of my childhood when a siren goes by?
Oh, you get a massage.
Whoa. Well, I like to hedge my bets, and I want to tell you guys a story about when a siren went by in my childhood.
I subject, Your Honor.
Well, we were talking a little bit beforehand about how we all have similar backgrounds in salesmanship.
Yes.
We all, speaking of Lowly Worm, he was a man who always had a job. He was always going to his job. Yes, I'm trying to segue.
It's a busy, busy town.
It's a damn busy town. It's way too busy.
No, don't segue. Let's make it an umbrella or a thread that goes throughout.
Now, David, what did you used to sell?
I sold encyclopedias door to door. We have talked about that.
So. Right. Where did you sell them?
I sold them here in the Lower Mainland. It was where I did my training. I did my training here in the Lower Mainland. Basically, training was five guys going out. We drove in one guy's Volkswagen. I didn't have a car at the time, nor could I probably drive then. Yeah, no, I couldn't drive. So we went in this guy's Volkswagen in the wintertime. I don't know if any of you ridden in an old Volkswagen.
Oh, yeah.
They're basically all metal, right? Yeah. So it's like the coldest thing. It's colder inside the car than it is outside the car.
That was Hitler's plan when he designed it.
Yeah, it's this giant conducting thing that's conducting all the cold from outside.
Some people say the Volkswagen was the worst thing Hitler ever did.
Name names, Ian.
Yes, who said that?
Anti-Semites.
What about his paintings?
Oh, fair enough. Please continue with the
Volkswagen. So we drove out to this kind of area in Surrey, you would go to what areas that were called moochie. And moochie areas were kind of lower class, crap in the yard with kids. Because those are people who don't want their kids to end up where they are. So they're looking for something, some way to get their kids out of the moochie neighborhood.
Right.
So when you come to the door selling them an educational opportunity, they are all for it. Mm. If you go to a rich, snotty person house, the first thing they ask you is, where's your business license? Which you do not have because you did not bother to get it because you have to buy one for every town you go to. So then you say, I'm leaving now. And the one person pursued me down the street, yelling at me as I ran away. So, but anyway, we went to...
I'm picturing, by the way, that they're a very rich person with a top hat and a monocle. Yes. Just chasing just you wearing spats.
The man from the Monopoly boat set. That's who it was.
Oh, this is a fake license. Get back here.
Chester the investor. He was chasing after me.
Oh, he passed go. Well, I owe him $200 damn. You know the rules of this town.
I want several strings going through this show. So, so we went out to this area in Surrey where we all had to go in our separate ways and sell door to door. The end of the night, there was me left. No, everyone else had gone to the bar and had just dropped out. That was it. They're like, this job sucks. I didn't realize selling door to door would suck so badly. They must have been thinking. Whereas I was thinking, this job is horrible, but it's kind of funny.
One day I'll have a podcast. It'll give me something to talk about.
This is grist for the mill. So,
by the way, sirens.
It reminds me of something in my childhood.
Shoot up, everybody.
Here comes the speedball. So I do cocaine and heroin because I don't want to get totally low.
I've noticed about it. It's, yeah. Cocaine and heroin's come up a surprising large amount, and I haven't brought it up until now.
You're in Vancouver.
So. Well, yeah. Dave used to write for Saturday Night Live in the 70s.
That's right.
There we go.
That was the only way we could write.
Oh, that's why you're dressed like a bee.
So, B. Arthur. Point that out. So then, so I actually sold some books that night. Sort of sold them because I wasn't quite good enough with the spiel to sell it completely. So they had to send another guy there to kind of make the deal solid. But they were impressed. They thought, this guy has some skill. So what we're going to do is we're going to send him to Alberta in the middle of winter so he can go door to door and sell encyclopedias. So that's what they did. I went to this, I had to stay overnight at this guy's house. He was an encyclopedia salesman. He lived in Shaughnessy in a big, big house. Shaughnessy is like a really wealthy area here in Vancouver. So he lived in this big mansion. He had a Porsche, but he drove a Volkswagen. This is a different Volkswagen, but it was probably equally cold inside. But he had a Porsche part that he got from the company for selling encyclopedias. He had this Porsche. So it's kind of impressive. I was thinking, gee, this is kind of interesting.
This guy sounds fake.
No, it was.
This sounds completely fake.
Yeah, that's like right. They
you
set you up.
Like you set up a fake fucking house. That's you go true. To a rich guy's house.
That's probably what they do, actually. Oh, I got this Porsche from the company. I don't bother driving it, though. Because I can't. It's a lease. But anyway, so then I had to fly from here to Calgary, take the bus from Calgary to Fort McKenzie. And it was just near the end of winter. So it was minus 51 in Fort McKenzie. They told me to dress for winter. So I dressed for a Vancouver winter. So I had jeans and desert boots and a lot of t-shirts and a very thin pea jacket. So I was not prepared for the cold I was going to face there. It was cold. My first night I spent huddled in a 7-Eleven. It was too cold. I couldn't take it. The next day I had to go and buy like Woolies.
And the 7-Eleven people were cool with that?
Yeah, they were okay.
What were you huddled near? Like the ATM or the hot dogs?
I just would go in, then I'd walk back outside again, then I'd come in and just kind of stand in a different spot. I was just hoping that they wouldn't be like, sir, this isn't a library. Sir, right. This isn't a delicatessen.
I want to talk way more about this, like, staying overnight 7-Eleven policy.
Well, I also want to know this other thing about it. Now, so you're 51 degrees below zero. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the 7-Eleven, are they still selling Slurpees?
Yeah, of course.
What the fuck? Like how?
Have you never bought Slurpees in the middle of winter?
In middle of Vancouver winter, but not 51 degrees. Like that's just suicide.
Sir.
That's suicide. You step outside, you have one sip of that, and you're a dead man.
Thirst exists, but you don't go
you're
outside.
You're sucking on a bullet.
You're fully encased in some sort of giant parka. You get your Slurpee, you race to your gigantic truck, jump inside, put it in its place, whatever the holder thingy, which probably didn't exist in those days. Because
wait, what?
This is pre-cup holders.
You're driving like Model T's?
This would have been in 1984.
Ah, you get your Slurpee 80. In a leather satchel back then.
84, 85.
In a Model T, they would have had the spittoon holder there.
How many cars in 1984, 85 had cup holders in them?
I don't know. I was like 3 years old.
Yeah. So
some
had none, mirrors for cocaine. I know that back then.
And heroin. So you could.
That was more a 70s thing.
So
we were all still mourning Belushi. We were taking a break.
So yeah, so I sold. We're still
weird SNL season one theme too. Anyway,
it's the third string. Yeah. That's
going to go. How dare you judge us?
I think there's a big mixed metaphor coming at the end. Mixes them all together.
Yeah, it's a jumble. Actually, we just at the end of the show, we just say five. We just say four different words in a jumble, and then they have to solve it in order to get the clue at the end of the show. So,
dang,
I don't know what else
you
to
said.
Say.
I didn't even be prepared. what I. You know, I you brought up encyclopedias. Those are the things why I was tripped up. This, and I
thought of seven things to say during your story.
No, no, but I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed to admit this. Is that this isn't even the first time door-to-door encyclopedia sales has come up as a top of conversation for me this week. That's why I'm like really weird that we're talking about it again. But what we were discussing, me and my friends who were bored, is there had to have been statistically somebody who bought an encyclopedia set and then turned around and learned about the existence of Wikipedia within like 30 seconds. Like statistically, it had to have happened that there was some guy that was like, man, this is really great value on these books. And then, you know, there's like, hey, what are you doing on the computer? Like, hey, I got all the information about llamas you need right here. Oh my God.
Well, let's recreate that scenario. Okay. You're that guy who just did that. And I'm a separate guy. Hey, what'd you do? You just got those encyclopedias. Huh?
Yeah. I've just got all these books.
Oh, why don't you check the computer? I just got this new computer. Let's turn it on. Oh, that's a shame. Well, listen, let me tell you what I did. I just subscribed to Playboy magazine. I got 75% off the cover price, buddy. All the pornography I'll want all year long. Excuse me, I'm just going to go check the computer. Son of a fuck! What?
Yeah.
Hey, you guys, I just bought this guy's record collection. Yeah, he was selling like 2,000 records, and I thought, what the heck, I'll just buy them all. Well, I guess I'll go on my computer now. Bitch hoarding, what the fuck?
Anyway, I went to the bulk map store, and you won't believe the deal I got.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm off to buy stamps.
I actually went into a... twice a year you have to mail something, right? And but I did. I went into a.
What are those two times?
Tax time. Like probably tickets and taxes. Yeah.
And if you're a kidnapper, you got to send the ransom note.
Yeah, but I was in like a Shopper's drugstore. It's a chain drugstore, and the guy was like, "Can I get stamps?" And the person's like, "Huh?" And it was just kind of like, "Oh right." So it made me feel a gajillion years old. Like the first time, I was like, "Oh yes, it's in the old man drawer." Like, I'll grab them.
Well, they got a thing at London Drugs now. Now, who mails things? The elderly.
Yeah.
The end. Mm-hmm. That's the end of that. They used to have the post office there. Now they've got self-serve postal service, which is a computer, and you can weigh things enter things on a screen and give them your information.
This sounds terrible.
And yeah, it's just old people weeping by this damn thing. First of all, young people won't use it. Old people are crying. Yeah. It's a nightmare machine. It is the worst machine that has ever existed. It's cruelty in circuit form. It's terrible.
I have to say I mail thank you cards quite regularly.
Oh, so. That's a good idea. Yeah. That means more. Actually, I've moved in the mail twice. Like I just mailed all the possessions I was keeping. Like, so how, it went from
how many packages would that be?
Like seven. Yeah. Like that I could carry in my hand. So I didn't have a lot of stuff, but and it's funny because then you start to build a rapport because I can't carry them all at once with the person there. And then, you know, you'd have a moment where it's like, I'm moving through the mail. Like, I don't have anything bigger than I can hold my arms to my name. I'm like, good for you.
I used to mail my laundry back to myself whenever I go on tours. Oh. I just didn't want to carry all that stuff back. And often I would go and just buy cheap t-shirts. And like, I'd have a sweater that was a good sweater, but I'd just buy t-shirts and, you know, underwear and whatever at like Kmart and then just put it all in a box and just mail it to myself. So it's nice about a week after you get home, get a whole bunch of dirty underwear in the mail. It's nice stuff.
I also like how we all pretended like we didn't mail anything and then we're all just gave all three great examples of how dependent we were on the postal service. So
but now back to the sales thing just briefly. I'll tell you mine super fast. Yeah, and then we'll get to Ben's interesting one. Mine was selling Big O tire subscription packages. Don't ask me what that means, but you can apparently subscribe to tires. So you get a certain amount of tires.
Is it tire a month?
Something. I don't know. But we're only offering it to businesses in the area as a promotional deal that you will talk up how good Big O tires are to your customers like you would.
Yeah.
You know, when you're buying something from a store and someone goes, hey, you like tires? Let me talk it up.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but notice the front of your car was smashed in. Maybe there were traction issues. I got a catalog right here.
So, you're going from business to business, and they're all telling you to fuck off. It's terrible. But I was on a sales group with a real pretty girl, and she was doing well because they would like to talk to pretty girl. So the only thing I could do was sell. I decided, you know where she's not going? Porno shops. So I went to Granville Street, which had even more porno shops than it does now, and just went from porno shop to porno shop, and I actually did fairly well.
This was pre-internet.
Yeah, and then I'm there signing one of the deals, looking down at this glass case full of rubber vaginas, and I'm making the sale, and I just look down at the rubber vaginas, and they're looking up at me, and just this moment of clarity, it was like, I can't do this. This is wrong. And so I quit.
You bought the rubber vagina.
That's right.
you went into the Ellie.
And I made it into a Muppet. And that was how my ventriloquist act began.
It's interesting that it took, you're like, I don't want to commit this immoral act against the porn shop people.
Well, it was like, how low?
I don't want to pull the sheep, the wool over their eyes.
You don't want to pull sheep over their eyes.
Yeah, I don't want to throw sheep into the porn shop and be like, whoa, you're drawing a lot of attention.
That old expression.
Yeah. Because sheep are so innocent.
Look, there might be a rockier rock bottom than the rock bottom I was at, but I didn't want to. Then it's just magma at that point. It's just like, I'm at the rockest
bottom. How good you would have felt if he closed the deal on, like, if the porn shop guy bought the tire catalog? You felt like you're out of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah.
It would have been like, oh, I'd still get it.
Yeah. Who's the happy guy in Glengarry Glen Ross?
Alec Baldwin.
Does it work out? No, it doesn't work out for
him. Because he's just there at the start, and he's in charge of everything, so he's fine.
He says he is. Here's my problem with Alec Baldwin at the beginning of that movie. He's like, I'm great at what I do. I'm fantastic. Let me do. And then he gets all the guys all charged up, and then they all destroy their lives. Nice job, Alec Baldwin. Nice motivational speech. Everyone's like in ruins at the end. The place is in flames. Yeah, good job. Good to spend that money on the Alec Baldwin, bringing him in.
Yeah, but he still has the lead, so he's good. They'll rebuild.
But it's the same when I sold encyclopedias before we went out. It's true. We had
Alec Baldwin.
That was originally what Glengarry Glen Ross was about.
It's based on that.
Yeah.
We had a guy who gave us the speech we give to customers. Because you don't just go in and just randomly throw things at you. Have a memorized spiel.
Well, give Ben the speech. Let's hear it.
Oh yeah, like I can remember it. Did I not say it was in 1984? So anyway,
it was a memorable year. It was a memorable year.
He gave it to us. And so
the movie 1984 came out, I believe, that year.
Yeah, it was probably 85. But anyway, he said it to us, and then you get all pumped up. You're like, these are the greatest encyclopedias that have ever been made. I can't even remember which ones they were now, but you're like, they're nothing better than these. Encyclopedia Britannica, phooey. These are the best, you know. And so you're just pumped up by, you know. And so that's a big part of sales, is that you have to pump yourself up as the sales force before you ever try and sell to the people. So Ben, you also have had...
Oh, yeah, I work as a cook a lot, and I work as a salesman. And then you get on the other end, you work as a cook because people, like, you have to deal with salesmen or selling you produce, which is really weird because then they're like hard. And you're like, what's it going to take to put you in a 2012 tomato tomorrow or whatever? And, oh, my God. And so I really resented salesmen. But then here's like, I worked mostly in telephone sales. And I don't know if you can tell from listening to the sound of my voice, but I sound good over audio. I look like garbage, but you wouldn't guess it, right? So it's the same as like any kind of call center job I've walked into. They won't address the obvious point. Like, it's the same as if like a 7 foot tall guy tries to join a YMCA basketball league and like, you got a great attitude, I think we're gonna keep you, you know, right? It's like, it's my voice, isn't it, right? It sounds better on the phone than someone's like, yeah, the voice like this.
That's who I always get calls from.
Yeah Hey,
that guy.
Hey, Dave. Hey, I'm your buddy. So I just have a palatable voice on the phone. But then I once have done like sort of face-to-face, and I would have a little booth, and I was in a major chain store selling a cleaning product. And I actually had like the Madonna headset. and
did it have the rhinestones on it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. And like, I had to wear the bra. And
you had
everything.
To wear the pointed bra.
Wow. And it was good. It brought attention. And then you would seriously...
Over the phone.
Yeah, just be like, this would be like face-to-face. So, and it was you know, you get a little crowd around you, and you'd have your microphone. And you're like, "Hey, check this! Gonna clean some stuff. Clean it up." And who wants some? Who wants some cleaner? It'd be really fun. But then there would be the sort of slow points near the end of the night where there'd be like nobody around, and there'd be one person walking down the aisle towards you, and then you know you're just like still like mic'd up and just like, "Hey!" And you just watch them dart wildly into the aisle to just come nowhere near where you were. Just where it was just like, "This is a little alarm to make sure nobody comes close to where I'm standing." So you would have these like really interesting, you know, busy afternoons that were kind of fun. And then these like totally just boring, you know, hours afterwards just to wind down. Like literally just hours of nothing.
So this is phone sales?
No, this was face-to-face. This was face-to-face. My major. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Phone sales, I've done outbound and inbound. And outbound's the best because you get to bother people. So, I mean, basically, if you just here's the thing. People are like, I don't want to be like a telemarketer. I don't want to disrupt people. And I'm like, well, what if you knew you're just disrupting the people you don't like, you know? Statistically you are sometimes, right? Like somebody, if you met them in real life in passing and they like, you know, they were sitting on the outside seat of the bus, they wouldn't let you skirt in or whatever. Like you could ruin that person's dinner statistically, right?
Yeah. If you just had a jerk list that you knew were actual jerks, there's proof that these people are assholes.
So you
just imagine every customer is Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, that's a bit far.
You can make it more personable.
I don't know. He take it a couple of notches down.
He created the Volkswagen.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. He did create the Volkswagen. What we've got calling us now are robots. We never have people calling us. It's just actual robots. And robots who are the bill collectors as well. Robots will call me up and tell me that I owe my... And I guess, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to feel like, oh, I should stay on. It's a robot.
I don't want to hurt Irona's feelings.
Yeah, I guess
they're lying that you read Richie Rich.
The
as a kid.
First time that you hear a robot calling you, you will listen to the whole conversation because it's I guess a robot's
you
calling.
Will?
Well, it's a robot.
It could be.
I have never listened to
it. It could be a Terminator. You're like, you just hear it out.
Yeah,
and maybe, might have instructions.
We'll be friends.
I'll tell you the moment I hang up. It's that the silence, the gap between when you answer and when they speak. I'm gone. Before they even click on, I'm just like, oop.
My wife also has a Spanish name, so we get very thick Spanish accented people calling, and there's no reason for that aside from salesmen.
They're selling lowriders.
Well, there's no need for that sort of business, Dave. But when you get hola.
Oh, what? Oh, pardon me? Oh, sorry. I was actually getting a glass of water during. I don't know what you guys are just talking about.
Apparently, I have to put a nickel in the hate cream jar. Is that what you're saying?
That is what we're going to have to do. I was just asking Dave how to get this stain out of the carpet because red wine, you just cannot get out of. Is there anything I could do as a house husband?
As a house husband? How about stop being a house husband?
Okay.
Pussy.
All right.
Jeez.
Did I ever tell you?
I got to get more water. Hold on. This cup. Is there a crack in the side? Or jeez.
So I don't know if I've ever told my story of telephone marketing work thing on the show. Have I told that story?
Not that I'm aware
of. I can't remember. So I'm going to tell it again. If I've told you before,
I've
fast forward.
I've told you
forward,
you haven't told it.
So. Fast forward 20 minutes because it's a long story. Everybody.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So that's not that long.
All right.
But this is my telephone. This is almost right after
Ben,
I came.
Hey, Ben, there's a brook where we can get fresh water out back. Just go do a little fishing and just fill up our tanks.
You guys go do that. I'm gonna tell this story.
Okay. We're both leaning way back from the microphones.
I want everyone to sit back now.
Because people...
I got a story for
listeners
you.
Can hear my detachment from the premise if I sit far enough away
by
from
By the way,
mic.
If you have a podcast and you have a guest on the podcast, make sure you tell a long couple of stories. So let them settle down. Sit down.
Okay,
good.
Well, we're talking about this subject. There's no other time this will come up.
Okay, Jane Austen, start your novel.
So, it is a truth universally acknowledged that a 19-year-old man in want of a job will take anything that's available. So, yeah, I went. My brother said, "Dave, you got to come to this job. It's great. You just talk on the phone to people, and you know you just have to sell them this." It was one of those things where it's like a pretend circus that the firemen are putting on for kids. You know those ones? You remember those?
Yeah, I've sold those before.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Sorry.
You don't remember? Okay. You never got a call for this?
Yeah. I think I have.
Yeah.
Look, here's
for the kids, Ian.
No, here's the call I always got was, we're trying to send blind kids to camp, which always sounded mean.
Yeah.
was just like, I hope that's well supervised. Otherwise, that's an incredibly cruel thing to do, to just let blind kids go in the woods. But what was
okay?
So firemen, is it all hose related circus acts?
No,
do they just hose down a lion?
Firemen are putting it on.
Okay,
they're raising funds for the orphans.
Okay,
so we got firemen,
right, and circus folk,
valor, courageous men, brave, positive. And we have orphans, poor orphans. They need help. They need a circus. So you need to send me your money right now so we can put on this pretend circus that doesn't exist, will never happen, but we'll send you tickets to and you can pretend that you went.
What?
Yeah, it's really odd.
What?
Yeah.
The circus doesn't exist?
No, there's no circus.
The ones I work for, there was a circus.
Okay, really?
Wait a second.
I don't believe it.
All right, I want to know
because
a couple
things. Because people from our office would go to it. Unless they're also
I think they're in it. I think they're in
they're
it.
They're in on it? Yeah.
Holy shit, there's no circus?
There's no circus.
Okay, you know listen, guys.
Where
was the circus?
I don't know. There's always like a
There's
circus.
A big circus. You're selling for this circus. You're selling tickets
doesn't
for the circus.
It doesn't have to be a big circus.
Was it at Pacific Coliseum?
No.
It's not big? The Agrodome?
Doesn't have
That's
to
not
be
a big
that
place.
Big.
Where is it going to be?
Anywhere they
at
can...
At Denny's?
Well, Bush, you know what? I'm not going to. I feel like it might be a bit of a hyperbole that there's no buildings in between Pacific Coliseum and a Denny's.
But I can't imagine where.
It's like, look, do you want your Denny's the size of Pacific Coliseum? Well, then we only have one other size of building that exists.
So they set up their tent in the parking
but
lot.
Refills.
They set up their tent in a parking lot, bring in the orphans, and put on the show. I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's what circuses do.
No.
For years, many years.
No, anyway. Let's back it up. No, what's your.
Yeah, let's back it way up.
You have to, if you're going to make a claim like that, you actually have to give as evidence to support your claim.
No, I don't.
So wait, all these people bought tickets to the circus, then went, fuck these circus tickets, we're not going.
No, you don't buy tickets for the circus. You buy tickets for the orphans to go to the circus.
See, I could sell tickets to people for people to go too. So that's why I believe mine was real.
Oh, okay.
Real.
See, we just sold them for the orphans went.
Okay, why don't the damn firemen let the orphans go to the circus? Just save some seats.
Ian,
you jerks.
Ian, you're taking this too seriously.
No, you've just made the firemen look like a bunch of dicks. First of all, it's a half-assed circus I've never heard about.
I did not make the firemen look like
this. This isn't Ringling Brothers. You're taking these poor orphans and giving them a shitty circus and charging them for it.
All right. If you could pocket your outrage, I'll just continue with my story.
Is Cirque du Soleil real?
I'm not sure I can pocket my outrage, Dave. These pants don't have pockets big enough for my outrage.
Because they only come in two sizes.
Two sizes.
Yeah.
The size of the Pacific Coliseum or Denny's.
I've got a size pocket, and I'll tell you what, not Denny's outrage.
I just can't imagine, was there 20 orphans? And they just rented a hall somewhere and put on a circus for them? I just don't understand. I think if you're going to have a circus with a bunch of orphans, you'd read about it in the paper. There'd be some mention about it somewhere.
It also feels
you'd
like...
You knew about it.
When
the Shrine Circus came to town, you knew it was coming.
There's a lot of waiting here.
Were you scouring the paper looking for evidence that the circus was there?
Yes, I was.
Circus you in town.
I went to the library, got out the microfiche.
Right. You just walked through the streets looking for freaks.
I went back. I scoured back 5 years.
Here's the deal.
Also read a lot of Blondie.
I bet you that the episode of this podcast could be accompanied with a newspaper clipping of that very circus from 1984. Probably with I don't know who makes the webpage, but 50% chance that'll happen.
David, as a former orphan, and I was.
Yes, I know.
Not for many months. It's all right. I got adopted pretty quick. It was okay. So if you're an orphan, what do you want? You want parents. That's what you want. You don't want to go where people are enjoying a circus with their parents. You don't want to go where you can see a lot of kids with their parents.
That's why it's the orphan circus. That's why it's the orphan circus.
It's just orphans allowed at the circus. Just solo
that's
children.
How they are. Orphans?
That seems weird. Who's buying the peanuts and the snacks? That's where you make your money at the circus. This makes no sense.
You buy them with your ticket.
Are there animals at the circus?
Yes, orphans. Only orphan animals are allowed at the circus. Orphan clowns. Their tears are real. That's what I'm saying to you. So anyway, so I go to this place.
Did you guys put acid in my water? Because I'm not following what's going on anymore. And I think it might be just me. Because you guys having dialogue and there's words coming out of your mouth and I recognize them. But linearly, I'm like, I think we were talking about me selling products.
You were
one
selling
point.
Soap a second ago. Yeah. Dave is with Circus Folk on the phone selling orphans.
No, but it was more abstract. It was like we were debating whether or not like the circus exists. And it's like, and then it has animals, but they're orphans too. It's like one of those dreams. It was just like, oh, like if my mother was also my friend from
elementary school. Welcome to the Circus Philosophy Podcast.
Okay. So you're on the phone with these people lying to them.
Yes. Well, let me just back up a little
bit. Oh, we can't.
Can I just, because I haven't even explained
what
I was doing.
That's what we need to do, back up more.
So
okay. It's like Memento.
I went to the job. That's
we're
right.
Five deep.
I've got this story written on my arm. I'm going to read it. I went to the place. I went through a rigorous job interview. The guy basically said, fill out this form. I filled out the form. He threw it in the garbage can. Not literally, but he just kind of put it somewhere. He gave me a photocopied page from the telephone book and then a spiel. What? I went and sat down at a desk with a phone. This is a while back, so it was a rotary phone. I dialed this phone number, got this lady.
Thanks for not making the sound effect for the whole thing.
There's seven digits. You probably had to dial 9-1 first, though. So really, 9. Yeah.
So then I talked to this lady.
Yeah.
It didn't go well.
No.
Then I hung up the phone. I went back to the guy and I said, I quit. He's like, what? I said, yeah, I don't like this. I'm quitting. He's like, you chicken shit. I kind of shrug, like, whatever. You can say whatever.
And you both put up your dukes and you just slugged it out, Marty.
I turned and started walking out.
The Queensbury style.
I turned and started walking out. And he's like, you're just a chicken shit. You little chicken shit. Get out of here, chicken shit. Walk away. Just walk away. He's like mocking me as I walked out.
What?
I left.
How often a day does he have to do that?
I don't know what I was thinking of. I don't know. I guess I had some idea I would get paid at the end of the night, which I don't think happens at any jobs, because I didn't bring any bus money. I basically had enough money to get there. I didn't even have money to get there, because it reminds me that when I got to the
zone. We're going backwards in time again.
When we got to the zone, there was a girl that I barely knew. She paid for me to get across the zone, because I only had a one zone transfer. I needed a two zone, so she gave me the extra, so I got a second zone.
And you said
zone.
To her, baby, I'm making fireman circus orphan money. I'll be able to pay you back by the end of the night, because that's cash on the barrel head, baby. Every night, right. I'm swimming in that fat fire circus orphan
lay
cash.
The money down. They're like, here's the money, here's the steak knives.
In 1984, you would have had to believe they just had a big sack of money. Like, he couldn't even
I don't even know what I was thinking.
Would have done. Yeah.
So
they didn't even have checks back then.
They didn't have bank machines.
I was so lucky. Yeah. I was so lucky. I knew the bus driver when I got on the bus. Like, I just knew him from riding the bus a lot.
Hey, Saul. Hey, Dave. How's the fireman orphan circus?
He looked at my transfer. He could see that I'd had a miserable night phoning one person and being called names.
Yeah.
So he looked at my transfer that was like an hour out of, hour past its place, whatever it is. What's the word? Expired?
Yeah. There you go.
Hour past, whatever.
Hour past its place. That's how a clock works.
This transfer, went to a farm. It just, it's fine where it is, but it's not coming back.
So, this gone to the farm transfer. He just looked at it and he went, okay. He just kind of shrugged
hey, young David.
And gestured, like, kind of one of those sort of like, get on. And then I got on and went
home.
Oh,
a pity ride.
It was a pity ride.
I've actually got a pity ride from a bus driver to the hospital before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's legit.
Yeah. This
was legit. It's
completely not legit. You know why, Dave? Because you were chicken shit. Chicken shit's walk.
Yeah, I went to, I dislocated my kneecap and then I had the paramedics came and I had to pop it back in. And this is when I was 19. Then instead of going to the hospital, I went to a rave in Chilliwack. and so I lived in Nanaimo. So I went all the way from Nanaimo to Chilliwack.
You betrayed that bus driver.
Yeah, no. And then what happened was is that then I got dropped back off at the ferry terminal and then I was covered in mud and I was like, I fell asleep and then I missed the last ferry. I had been for a while, but I missed the last ferry out of town. Like I woke up to the like knee and I watched it pull away. I'm like, why don't anybody wake me up? And I saw myself in the mirror and I was like, all right, yeah. And so
only they could have heard my voice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, like it's so silky. And then so I went out and I talked to the bus driver and just like a dumb kid and I'm like, I don't have any money and I don't live here. So what? And he's just like, you know what? You can go to like this like transfer station or whatever and you can sleep there under some newspapers. And
then, let me introduce you to a chicken hawk.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess it was like you was only gonna need to kill a couple hours, right? And then he saw I was limping. He's just like, "What's wrong with your leg?" And then my knee had swollen up so much that he could like see it through my pants. And I rolled it up. And then he was kind of just like, "Yeah," like more like just like he had to out of a sense of moral obligation drive me to the hospital. He's just like, "Yeah, this stupid kid." So
he would have been part of the lawsuit.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And then I remember like I'd always heard that, you know, hospitals, it takes forever to, you know, it takes forever to get help if you're not bleeding. I'm like, oh, sweet. And then, like, I'll just kill some time, like, in the waiting room. And there was no one there. And then and I was like, oh, would it have hurt my, like, damaged my knee if I'd been walking on this at all? And they're like, yeah, yes, it would have. And I was like, oh, because I had been dancing on it for, like, I don't know, like, 15 hours. And then it was over. And then they're like, okay, well, get out of here. And then I just asked if I could, like, sleep in the lobby. And then, like, yeah, I guess, you know, like, for a hospital, I guess we can't send you out on the street. So there you go. That was the pity I got from the bus driver.
Oh, that's good. What pity did you get from a bus driver?
I've been yelled at by a lot of bus drivers, yeah. But no, I've never really got a lot of pity. But then I didn't go dancing after my knee had fallen out, to be fair.
And you know what? Side note, my knee still kind of messed up to this day, but it was a wicked party, still worth it. Glow-in-the-dark skydivers. Hello. Once in a lifetime.
Sure is.
Yeah, I come from a family on my wife's side of bad knees. There's a lot of knee popping out kind of situations. Yeah. I'm going to tell them not to listen to this story. That story will horrify them.
Is that right?
Yeah. Case of knee popping out, call 911 or go to a rave, dance for 15 hours, go to sleep wherever, try to find your way home.
So you're coming from Nanaimo, you said? Did you grow up on the island?
Yeah, but born and raised. Yeah, NRGH for life, Nanaimo Regional General Hospital. I was born at that hospital, and if you're from around here, a lot of babies are born there. But I lived, like, I could almost see the hospital. Wow. And the guy who lived across the street from me was a friend of mine who was born on the exact same day at the same hospital. So we would have been like babies side by side.
So there's a chance you were switched.
Yeah,
maybe could have been switched. Yeah.
Your dad's voice, was he kind of like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, my dad.
And his dad was all, hey, how's everyone?
Yeah, I was like, hey, I'm a real man. It'd be funny if we could see how not like a real man I look, right?
So you're really slagging yourself way too much.
No. I'm just very skinny. Like you would assume it would be a heavier set person that would have a deep voice in general. I'm stereotypical that way. I don't expect, like, I look like I would like fix computers on a commercial, you know?
Yeah. So when you do stand-up and you go up and you take the microphone, do the audience just go like, the fuck? Oh, wow. Everyone settle down. We were going to heckle this.
Whoa.
Bitch, but wow.
He's channeling a real man.
We were going to pity him like a bus driver, but what the fuck? Let's just all settle down and listen to what the rich tones have to say about the world.
I'd assume I know about computers, like if I looked at me. So, you know, I don't know.
Do you?
No.
Nah.
No.
Who does? Who needs to? They just get smarter. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And then they take over, right? So.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, don't worry.
Are calling me now. I mean, I assume.
I don't think I could possibly have body image issues based on the premise. I'm like, man, doesn't my voice sound awesome? It's like... Anything scaled back from that, I guess it looks like. I don't have as much self-esteem, but I don't know.
Speaking of computers, I think anyone that learned how computers work, because that's where you're told, like, you got to learn computers. Everyone's got to take a computer course. My mom works a computer as well as I do now, because it's so simple. So that was a waste of time. The end.
And also,
lesson learned. Whatever the next thing is, you don't need to fucking learn it. If it's important, it'll come around and meet you halfway.
Yeah, I graduated in 99, and it was like the last year they would let you not learn about computers. Like, they would still were kind of like, oh, maybe they won't catch on. We can save a lot of money. And then, like, in the year 2000, like, boom, computers for everybody. So there is like there's people the same age as me that are just like, oh, like, I got all this graphing paper, and this is like this will to work, like, let's go, world. So computer studies was just a totally optional thing that I never bothered to take. So,
well, I look at something like, you know, do you know Excel? Okay, well, I could go and I could take that workshop and learning Excel, or I could go to this thing called YouTube, and it's on my computer, and I can follow it along, and there you go. Because there used to be that guy who would be on TV who looked like Jack Layton, you know, that had the same look, and he would be like, I'll give you a CD, and you just go along with your computer, and it's just, da-da-da. It's like, but that's also free now, so goodbye. We're fine. There's no need for any of that.
Well, that's, I think you probably, I mean, this isn't the time or place to discuss it, made like a pretty strong argument for why like the cost of university should be getting less rather than more.
Oh, it sounds like that's things that we can talk about that. That'd be fine. Why do you think that's a bit bullshitty now? It's like, yeah.
That it's just like, it's weird that information, like the thing that universe and the ability to measure information is being more free. Like it's the same as it's like the rates at Flight Center should get cheaper because it's like we can look up our own flights. So information is more free, but university becomes more expensive, which is the exact, what you have is less valuable. So
yeah, they're just upping the fear that if you don't have this,
yeah,
you will be, well, we'll call it pulling a Ben. You'll end up in a ferry terminal begging a man with your swollen leg for a ride to the hospital while you're covered in mud. That's what you'll be if you do not go to university. But yeah, it used to be like these were the sacred tomes that only these rare people that you would have to travel to the university miles from your home and live. And it's like, no, it's all there if you want to take the time and, check it out.
That's part of it that I would say, though, is if you want to take the time, it is hard to be that disciplined that you would, you know, learn yourself, you know, teach yourself.
So you're paying for your lack of motivation.
You yes, you are.
Would you be motivated by, say, taking, I don't know, how much does university cost
well,
now?
You're paying for
Let's
your
say $30,000. What if I give you $15,000? Motivate your damn self. I'm pretty motivated, $15,000. Keep the money.
But you also get that valuable piece of paper that says that you learned something.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying...
You love paper.
I'm saying that university is important and it's good if you go. All I'm just saying is that logically, the price should be going down, not up, because the value that it offers is not as much as what it used to be. So the way, you know, marketing economics should be, considering the fact that they just make up how much it costs in the first place, there's no reasonable reason why
What are you selling? Are you selling the information? Because the information is available for free.
Teachers aren't making more money. The profs aren't making more money. Yeah. So why is it getting more expensive? Mm-hmm. What you're offering that's costing more is easier to access for
because
free.
Because universities are just like governments, is that they swallow money. So no matter what their budget is, they will swallow it and somehow spend it all, right? Mm-hmm. So the same with the government. It doesn't matter how much taxes are. They'll always need more money because they just want to spend your money. And the same with universities. They just want to spend money, so they always need more money because they always have more projects and things they want to do. I mean, go to UBC now. The place is almost all townhouses and condos.
Right.
So they've sold up all this land that was granted to them in the past and, you know, this huge commercial, you know, the residents there aren't students. They're just regular people who buy townhouses and stuff. So that's, the university is obviously making, you know, millions of dollars off this land, off these townhouses and condos. And yeah, and yet the tuitions are just, they're more expensive than ever.
Yeah. It's a big fucking scam. That's what I was about to say. It's obviously, if it's just, it's useful. That's the thing, is like, it's taking something that we actually need.
I think though that you would rather look on your doctor's wall and see a degree from UBC than rather that a Wikipedia entry.
Okay, now I
agree.
Doctor, yes.
No.
Let's start chemist.
No, don't get me wrong.
Working our way down the list.
I agree. I agree that the university is important. My whole point is that the way they're being run right now is clearly bullshit. They should exist, and they're good, and it's good if you have a degree. But it's just so transparent.
That's not what I was getting from you. I was just getting a real anti-university vibe.
People,
no, that's me.
My grandfather is like a university professor. He's passed away now. UVic and really academic family, so there's always like a big push, you know, to be academic. But I think that honestly, for where I am now, like if I'd gone into school when I was 19 and just racked up a whole bunch of debt, like I think I would have been worse off than I am now just because of how much it cost.
Yeah.
The experience of going to university would have been great, except that it like financially would have crippled me. So it's just like, how financially crippled can you make people to still offset the great experience, right?
Well, that's what it feels like now. It's like, to me, it feels like I see kids who are like in grade 7 or 8 who are panicked about, you know, it's like, you got to know what you're going to do in university, which is bullshit. You know, so they're terrified, and then you've got to go to university. You must, or you will die. Mm-hmm. And then you go to university, you spend too much money, and then for the rest, you know, for like decades, you got this student loan debt, and that's crippling you. And yeah, the system seems fucked. It seems really fucked.
Yeah, well,
it starts
no.
fucked, it ends fucked.
Yes and no.
Okay, give me the good.
What, the good about university?
Yeah.
Well, the experience of university, the experience of going there, of learning, of attending school with other people who are interested in learning.
I agree. That's a
good totally
thing.
Different than
communal,
you know,
learning
high school.
Is great. Yeah.
And especially once you get out of first year and all the chaff gets washed out of the university system, like second, third year, fourth year are much more interesting and actually kind of exciting. Like if you're interested in learning, that's where you want to go.
Right. And so how many years do you have at the university? Like about 4 years then, would you say? Four years of that experience? Maybe two?
I did 6 years.
But... Six? Okay. You got 6 years. So you got 6 years.
I was lucky. I went at a time when I could pay for it by working a part-time job on the weekends, right?
But let's look at now kids today, though. So, is that four to 6 years of like, this is swell, is that worth your decades of crushing debt? And is that worth the time when you should be young and enjoying life going, oh, my stomach, I'm vomiting from stress over, I didn't get an A in grade eight. I'm screwed forever.
School is so different than when we went to it. I mean, school, when we went to it.
There's robots there.
It was a lark compared to what school's like now for kids.
Back then, they only could build buildings the size of a Denny's.
That's right. Yeah. Now,
yeah.
But now,
look at the size of the buildings that they could build one other size of.
Then Francis Applebee's came and fucked it all for everybody.
No, but I'm serious. School is a lark. Like, so much more about schooling. School now is about like, there is a class called planning that they have to take, which is all about planning for your future. What are you going to do when you leave school? How do you write resumes? Well, what job are you going to get? What do you want to do when you leave here? You're going to go to university. You're going to go to trade school. What's your plan? Like, what stream do you want to go into?
Yeah, no, I was really just talking purely financially. I mean, would you admit at least there has to be some point at which the returns aren't worth? Say you got an 18-year-old
English
kid,
degree.
And then they're regardless of what it is, and say that they go to school and they have a great time and they have $2 million of debt, like certainly $5 million of debt. Like, isn't there going to be a time when you have to admit that the amount of money that they're saddled with doesn't offset the experience, considering the fact they had to commit to that financial burden before they can even drink in the United States.
$2 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, like eventually there's going to have to be a point, right? Like what time do we say, hey, we're financially crippling generations of people before they have a chance to really think reasonably what they're doing?
Yeah.
Because they haven't been taught the things we're trying to teach them, which is why we're charging them money in the first place. They made them realize, use their critical thinking skills, that wasn't good value because they're going to have to pay it off the rest of their life. Like, surely you must admit there hits a time. There has to be a value. Like, wouldn't you think like $2 million would be too much?
It's hard for me to say, like,
$10 million.
NFL football
star, you're gonna have to be one to get out of debt.
Like, I'm just talking like now. I can't think in those terms because it's not $10 million. So.
No, it's not, but you admit that at one point it has to get too big.
But it
right?
can be. Here's the thing. Like, again, I've got people in my family that have debt that might as well be $2 million because it's impossible to pay it off. Mm-hmm. There's just no way you could pay it off. Yeah, like for 10 years. If you worked full time, you could not pay this debt off. Can't do it. You know, and they're not unusual, you know. There's the impossible. Possible pit.
We were lucky because we did an RESP, like a registered education savings plan. So it's like an RESP. You put money in, the government matches what you put in. And then, you know, it accrues like mutual funds. So it increases in value, right? So like both my daughter's university education is paid for now. So that's not something I have to think about because we planned, you know, ahead of time for this eventual possibility. And if she'd gone to beauty school and become a hairstylist, then that would have been more money for us in our pockets that we'd saved. So, you know.
So you kept...
What I'm saying is...
You kept messing up your hair and trying to get her to be a beautician.
Because it is a reality that, unlike when I went to university, and I could work in a parking lot on weekends and pay for my schooling... That this is not, it's not the same now. I mean,
but it also is another thing too. So all those great experiences, let's agree straight up everything you said. Let's double it even. Let's just say that
it's 20 all, million.
Yeah, no, not the money. It doesn't mean the experience. Yeah. Like, however, whatever the best experience you were talking about at university, frickin' let's double that shit, right? Fucking double university goodness for the same amount of money I'm talking about. What do you think would happen to that person if they hadn't gone to university? They would just live in this vacuum without life experience.
No, you're right.
Where nothing good could happen to them without any guidance.
But it depends what you want from your life. Yeah. Like if university isn't your thing, then you don't go to university. Definitely don't go to university because it is a waste of money.
Yeah, but no one's saying that. Like in school, that's very rare. Well, it's very rare. From what
they're pushing trades a lot in school.
They are. But they're kind of pushing them in that way. That's the maybe trades are for you.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No, I mean, it's different than when we went to school. It honestly is. Like, I'm amazed at what level they do math compared to where I was doing math in grade 10, what they're doing.
Well, there's more numbers now.
There's definitely more numbers. No, it's just like everything's everything's gone like down lower. Like, you know, when we were doing trigonometry in grade 9, they're doing it in grade 7 and stuff like that, right? So you're going like, why are you doing
this?
Well,
that's now what I'm noticing with my niece and nephew. I like see the stuff they're doing. It's like, well, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then I also see the stress that's on them. And I'm like, you know, for a 10-year-old, you should not be this stressed.
Yeah.
And then I remember when I was like 11, I'm like, I was pretty stressed. Like I was told, oh, nice. I was told by my teachers, you got to do, you know, this is permanent record stuff. If you don't get your A's now, you're not going to get them, you know, that will fail you to this. And man, I had a stomach ache for about 4 years running. And I could see, again, my 10-year-old nephew starting to get that stomach ache. And it's just like, oh, this is not right. There's something broken about this.
Because I scammed my way out of high school, right? Like, because I did that.
But you were a grifter.
Well, I was a grifter. Well, what I did was I discovered...
Fake mustache?
I discovered that if you went to college, you didn't need all your sciences that you get at high school.
Oh.
So I just dropped out of math, dropped out of all the sciences, just did art. So I did a graphics career prep program. So I just did graphics classes and art and photography and art classes all the way through high school. And then when I left, I took grade 11 algebra summer school. And then I applied for college and got my sciences there and then went to university. So I didn't do any sciences because I didn't want to do sciences. So I just avoided physics, biology, chemistry, everything at school. I didn't do any of that. I did band and I did art classes.
They dropped band by the time I was in high school.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
That's awful.
When I was around 15, I stepped outside of the Matrix. Which was the school thing. And I went, oh, this is the world. I'm fine with this. And that's when I started like just working for myself, going to the CBC. And that's when I started doing stand-up and I started doing improv and I started touring way before I should have been.
That's a path that works for you, but it's not for everyone, obviously.
No, right? But the only reason it worked for me was things were so shitty that my teachers went, you're getting way too stressed, man. You got to start doing something else. And so they basically forced me to take a drama class. And because I took that drama class, I learned about other stuff. And I was like, oh, but I think a lot of kids don't get that. You know, there's a world beyond this that you could check out. Luckily, I had that slight exposure, and that's what saved me. But oh man, I could see myself going down that road completely. I think
kids have lots of exposure to the world.
I mean, the thing is that there are a lot of different paths, right? Some are good for some people, some are good for other people. But university is the only path that'll rack up that amount of debt that quickly amount of time. Like a bank won't even lend you $50,000 of debt, but you by the time you're 20, never had a job, but you can have that. You know, you've never had a job.
What about 4 years of heroin addiction? And I speak from experience. That will rack up the debt.
Maybe. I remember, though, the first day of college, because I went to, like, drama school, because, what the hell?
Yeah.
So
you had to go to university or college.
College, or you're going to die.
Oh, yeah.
Also, girls were there, so that was nice.
Yeah, girls are
But,
good.
Like, but day one, here's your package.
They were all gay. That was the problem.
Here's your package, man. Oh, thank you. Thank you for the package to come to Douglas College. Let's see what we got. There's your name. That's good. All right. And there's good classes. Well, that sounds great. Here's a thing, apply for a credit card if you'd like to. Third thing down. Let me just see what the next thing is. Apply for a different credit card and another credit card. Okay. Yeah. There you go. I've got no idea what money is.
I don't think they do that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so different. Like, because my daughter is going to university now. My oldest daughter.
Did you forget her name?
Millis.
You're scratching your temple.
We make up names.
We make up names. Because
Blambla.
To keep protect the innocent.
Listen.
My oldest daughter,
writing for
Larry,
Saturday Night Live in the 70s. I'll tell you what I told Dan Aykroyd.
Like, there's just way more support, like, from the school for the kids than there was when I went.
I'm glad
to I went, it was just kind of like, here you go, fucker. Just jump right in there. Good luck to you. What? A school map? What do you need that for? UBC, it's a small place, right? You're going to find, like...
Yeah, our school motto was, good luck, fucker.
One time I...
was on our flag. Right.
It's in Latin, though. I missed a test in when I was at UBC because I couldn't find the building the test was in. I just had no idea where it was.
Ironically, that was the test.
Yeah. That was probably the test. I had to go to the teacher after.
Your professor was wearing construction uniform.
I had to go and explain, and they're like, what?
It's humility. If you can ask directions, you will pass.
I failed.
Oh. I failed. And that's when UBC was New Age. Anyways, end scene.
Well, one thing I'm curious about is how a boy from Nanaimo became a massive baseball fan.
I was in the early 90s. I would have been 10 in 80 in 91. I was 10.
Okay.
So I was of the right age, and then my grandfather was a baseball fan.
Okay.
So but baseball.
So it's genetic.
Yeah, I guess it was genetic. But I can remember in 1989, Kirk Gibson hitting the home run to in the first game of the World Series against Oakland. It's like my earliest baseball memory. Might be 88 or 89, but I can remember that. And I can go back and watch YouTube footage. I'm like, whoa, like, I'm that old. Like, it's so shitty. Like, this was on TV. It'd be like the worst video camera you'd buy now.
Was that the Dodgers?
Yeah, the Dodgers. Yeah.
That's the famous one where you can see the taillights of all the people leaving the stadium before this massive home run.
What it is he was hurt. I'm trying to remember all the details. Was he was hurt and then he wasn't going to play. And then it was the bottom of the ninth. And then they put him in and he couldn't run. So he had to either hit a home run or like they were going to lose. And then he did. And then they won. And it was against Dennis Eckersley, who was like one of the best pitchers in the game. So it wasn't supposed to happen. But you watch the footage and I'm like, I remember it so clearly. And I'm like, you can't even see anything. This looks like late 80s like sports TV cameras were horrible. So you couldn't even see the ball leave his hand. I was like, why did this ever get popular? So
it's the same with hockey. Like Americans had so much trouble. Like, it's much more popular now in the States because high def has allowed people to see how the game is, you know.
Yeah.
Not only do you can see the puck, but you can see the play more because it's a wider aspect.
I can nerd out and give specific reasons for why baseball is the best sport.
Well, I like to...
For one, is are you a fan of sports or just
yeah I am
okay good this is it for baseball. Bear in mind, like, I'm a big NFL football fan.
Me too.
Yeah, I've been to home games for all the Canadian Major League Soccer teams. So I just like sports.
There's only three of them, but still
two of them have only been around for a couple of years though, right? So I've made all the home games and stuff. So like, I'm just a sports fan. I like going to stuff. But baseball, superior. If you want to use sports as a metaphor for life, like, baseball players more accurately represent like the kind of person I am. Like, the fights that happen in baseball, they're short and shitty, you know, like nobody knows how to fight.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody gets hurt, it's like, oh, my hand slipped, and it's really fast. Like, it's like real life.
Yeah.
There's no clock, so you actually have to win the game. That's the biggest reason why baseball is a superior sport. On most other sports, you get a lead, and then the strategy is you sit on the lead for the rest of the game, and it's boring.
Yeah.
But in baseball, there's no clocks. So you actually have to win.
Yeah.
So you can, when people do come back from like 10 points down and because there's no time frame. So,
interesting thing about baseball is that kind of quiet and an explosive, sudden explosive, interesting something happening. You know?
Yeah. I've heard somebody compare it to opera. Because it's like, and I forget the terms, for opera, there's the sort of boring story part where they just trudge through all the plot. And it's also so the actors can get their voices back, right? Because it's like, and then there's a part where it peaks and then there's like, whoa! And then like, that's when the ball comes off the bat and it actually follows like a trajectory and the whole crowd is just like, for a second. But it's like the quiet moments in between is what builds that tension. It's like the building up. Yeah.
That's something I like that, I can't remember who said it. It was either Philip Roth in the book, The Great American Novel, which is about an alternate baseball league in the States, or in the book by, what's his name? The guy who lives here in White Rock, who wrote Shoeless Joe and... Patrick? Is it Patrick? Kins?
Once again, we have three computers.
We'll just edit that in afterwards.
We'll edit that in later.
Yeah, it's a different voice. It's like Patrick Kinsman.
But anyway, what he said was because as long as you are within the lines in baseball, it's a fair ball. It doesn't matter if it's outside of the stadium or 5 miles away or 20 miles away. It's still fair. Like, those lines go forever.
Yeah.
In terms of in bounds. Which is it is kind of a fascinating sport in that way. This sort of idea of this quiet, explosive sport that's almost like this eternal field that it plays on.
Yeah, I was in Fenway Park when a ball was hit out of the park.
Okay.
And it's like, it's kind of impressive. And you're like, that has hit somebody in the lineup for the House of Blues. This amazing moment where I was like, wow! And this one guy has got a concussion. He's like, your night's done. You're standing too close to that huge wall. Yeah.
Yeah, my brother-in-law was at the Blue Jays game in Toronto, and he caught a foul or a ball. I don't know if it's a foul ball or just a ball that came out. He caught it in his hand, and I have it at home because he gave it to me at the time. So.
Oh, excellent.
I knew as a fan. So
nice.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the coolest baseball experiences I've had was I was at Safeco Field, which is what it's called. It's a freaking insurance company, but it's what it's called in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I was sitting up top, and then there was these people in the right field foul line, and they're chanting. They were like, Jana, Jana, And people were just sort of like, that's kind of abrasive. Like, you don't chant at baseball. You know, like there's a guy trying to keep score. He's like, this is bothering me. And
for you, he's keeping score.
Yeah, yeah. And then somebody put a cameraman shot this woman, this old woman who was holding a sign that said, happy 100th birthday, Nana. And then we were all like, oh, they're chanting Nana, and it's her 100th birthday, and she came to a baseball game. And everybody realized that. And then she got a standing O, in the stadium.
Wow.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment in between innings. And then for the rest of the game.
Can I just say that that's called the Soto Mojo's SO?
No, but it even got better was that for the rest of the game, if a ball went to the right-hand side, people were just like, Nana, Nana, Nana. And you could see the ball getting passed. So every foul ball on the right-hand side. So this woman had all this huge thing of balls.
That's great.
For the game. Yeah, it was incredible. So baseball there's a stoppages in play allow for those cool real-life moments.
This is the most balls I've had for 40 years.
Oh, you don't know that.
Well, that's true.
No, yeah. Old folks' homes.
You're just making a generalization.
True. I was making it.
So there are never any riots in a baseball stadium, really. There's no that.
Not true. Disco demolition.
I was going to say disco demolition.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. That was a huge riot. And
that was a bit of a backfire.
Here's what I always like when I see a baseball fight, though. And this, again, I'm not a baseball guy, so I just see the highlight reels at the end of the news. When it's like, oh, the guys are so mad, and they run out to fight, but none of them grab a bat.
Why would you do that?
Because you've got bats there. Like, how mad are you?
No, that's the thing.
If this was a UK sport, they are grabbing the bat first thing.
Have you ever seen them grab a bat in a fight in cricket?
No. Well, not in cricket.
You have to remember one thing is they're athletes. Mm-hmm. Even if they're mad, they're still sportsmen. They're not going to take a bat to someone.
They would if they were hockey players.
Occasionally.
This is it. No, you brought up, though.
Point made.
This is why this is my criticism of hockey. Okay. I'm going to say it right here, and I'm born in Canada, and this is why hockey
He may get evicted.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say? This is why hockey.
You've done a lot of raising the hand, look.
Look, I know.
I'm going to say some stuff.
I know it's really tough to take.
But I like pie.
Here's the thing.
I'm telling you right now, folks. I'm going to say something not controversial at all, but I think puppies are adorable. All right,
I'm not going to lie to you. I do like pie. I know that there's a thing in hockey, if you know about hockey, and Don Cherry talks about it a lot. It's called the code. And it's like this set of ethics, which if you break the code, then somebody's going to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
Like, in short, that's what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it gets broken constantly.
Constantly.
So if it gets broken constantly, there's no such thing as a code.
No.
If there was such a thing as a code, it would almost never be broken.
Well,
so your entire philosophy of your sport that protects it from being a goon sport is a complete lie.
So you're saying hockey is a goon sport?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I would agree, but I think that's part of why I like it so much.
Yeah,
no, it's
fair.
True.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I am not a fighty kind of person. I am, you know, I'm a
you're a podcaster.
I'm a roll into a ball. I'm a roll into a ball kind of person, right? So I admire a sport that
Dave,
involves,
you know what you are?
You're interrupting
chicken
me.
Shit.
Yeah, no, but you are chicken shit.
Well, we've established that.
Chicken shit!
Check out chicken shit over there.
Yeah.
We've established
that. Make one sale!
Why? What is this? Is like a goon podcast.
What we are doing is so unfair, Dave.
It goes
I'm
against
sorry.
The podcaster's it's, code.
That's right. Yeah. You know, there's a code of podcasting. And
Don Cherry, the outrage.
Please don't punch the microphone. Yeah. So that is the only code we have. Don't punch the equipment.
So that's what I like. Cause, so what I, you know, I'm like a physical coward.
Me too. So, yeah, yeah. No, you know, we established
so
that.
I really like the idea that there's this sport where these people are incredibly skilled because you cannot deny there's a lot of skill in hockey.
No, absolutely.
These are guys on skates shooting pucks. Like they're skating around holding a stick and skating backwards like as fast as I can skate forward. Faster than I can skate forward. Mm-hmm. And I can skate. You know, they can like turn around. They can crash into each other. They can shoot a puck. Without falling down, they can fight each other, you know, mostly without falling down. Like, it's incredible the amount of skill. So you have this really skill sport, but it has this kind of brutal element that also requires you to be this kind of he-man, like a super, you know. So I like that element of it. The same way that I like about football, whereas you have this mix of, you know, incredible brutality, but also this sort of beautiful balletic part of it with the throw and the catch and all that part. But
No, I actually don't disagree with you. I saw in 2008, the... half of the international the IIHF International Hockey Tournament in Quebec City, where the Nordiques used to play.
Sure, yeah.
So it's like international hockey with NHL guys and like better rules and a bigger ice surface where it enhances all the finesse parts of the game. That kind of ruined the NHL for me because I was like, oh, like it could be like this all the time. But my argument with it is you put yourself at a severe advantage by being cheap to the other team in hockey. And because basically, like, if you walk up, you can put your worst player on the ice and then just, like, physically injure the best player on the ice, and it doesn't matter. And that's a problem, because ultimately the NHL agrees with you. They're like, oh, we think violence is something that's appealing about the game.
Yeah.
But when you make breaking the rules to your advantage, you ruin the competitive aspect of the game that makes it interesting as a sport, and it just becomes a spectacle.
Well, that's true. I mean, it has become a spectacle. I mean, 20, 30 years ago, or when I was a big hockey fan, like, I don't really watch it as much as I used to. When I was a big hockey fan, you know, the players that played fought. It became to the point where there were players that were there specifically to fight. So something would happen, like say someone, you know, slashed the team star player and everyone's mad about it. So the team star player doesn't turn around and sock the guy. He goes off the ice. Two goons come on. They fight. They get penalties, whatever. And then they're sent off to the dressing room. And that's the end of them for the rest of the game. Well, what's the fun of that? Like, the interesting part is like someone like Bobby Clark of the Flyers, who was incredibly skilled, but also like a brutal nut. You know, it's been a long time. I mean, the last time there was a fight between two skilled players was Iginla and... No, his name's got on my head from the Tampa Bay during the Stanley Cup.
Oh, it was Le Cavalier?
Yeah, Le Cavalier. Yeah. I mean, that's the last time that two players that you would consider, like,
the
coaches were like, you know, grabbing their, it's like, don't hurt your hands. You know,
like, yeah.
Because it's just a totally different commodity now. And it's kind of, in a way, it has kind of, for me, it's kind of, I don't really enjoy hockey the way I used to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think I did used to like hockey more, and it's just a poorly run league. I guess I'm not mad at hockey. I'm mad at the NHL, more or less, or the way they've turned it. But if you have any kind of game that gives like a board game that gives an advantage to breaking the rules, it no longer becomes interesting to play that game.
Yeah.
Like, then that's the same with any sport. See, with baseball, there's a code, and it never gets broken because your only retribution is you just throw the ball the other guy, and then he gets on base. Yeah. So, and then even happened last year, somebody did that, and then the guy stole home plate, like it, and immediately punished the team for enforcing the code.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen very often. But if you can just like you know, injure the other team's best player with your worst player and have him ejected from the game, and then just continue on with no repercussions, then why wouldn't you just do that every single time?
I'm trying to think of that author's name. So
is hockey? Do they play hockey in the UK? Is that like a UK game?
I mean, it feels like they should.
It feels like it's such a good beat 'em up culture there. They're just like, why isn't that caught on there? That seems like that would completely work.
Yeah, I thought the culture of honor would have flown in the southern United States too. That's why I think that they moved there. Everybody criticized them. They're like, why did they move this sport to these like backwoods, like hillbilly towns? And I was like, well. Look inward.
That's just good advice, period.
Tampa Bay, you've just been dissed.
Look inward. How are we doing for time, Dave?
I think we can wrap it up quite safely.
Because I think look inward.
Those were the three topics we talked about.
That's right.
Encyclopedia sales and then sports. That was even three. That's two.
Yeah.
Oh, and university. That's good.
That's fine.
Good enough.
Again, look, we got the damn moral of the story, which is look inward.
Yeah.
Unlike university, this show is free.
That's a good
and
point.
And well worth its price of admission. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would say almost worth its price of admission.
I think there will be a Wikipedia version of university that will be at some point open.
Okay.
WikiU? That's what it'll be called. I'm going to trademark that.
Yeah,
first.
Get on it. Whew. Get on it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I think there's one for comics that's coming up, but we've gone long enough. We'll talk about that maybe next week when we're at Comic-Con. Dave and I are going to Emerald City Comic-Con if you're there.
We're
going to
be there.
Spot us. We're wandering around. I'm also going to be doing the Critical Hit show, our Dungeons & Dragons show, there in Seattle on Saturday at 7 o'clock. Also, we're going to be doing it Wednesday here at the Rio Theater.
Wow. I'll be carrying a complete set of encyclopedias, so if they recognize me.
Remember, he's a chicken shit. Just take him from
what me. Size building would the Comic-Con be taking place in? Would it be a Denny's size building?
Yes, it's perfect for a orphan circus.
Orphan fire circus. And anyway, we normally plug stuff that we got coming up in the future. We're going to be at a lot of Comic Cons in the near future. Anyway,
no matter when you hear this podcast, whenever you they have Comic Cons coming up.
We'll be there. That's what we'll be. Also, listen to The Irrelevant Show. Got some sketches on there. Ben, you got anything coming up?
I have. At any year that you listen to this, I am hosting a weekly show at the Prop House Cafe. That's on the corner of Venables and Commercial.
In Vancouver,
British Columbia, Canada.
What's the
North American continent?
What's the postal code for so people can get
there? Oh, GPS? Yeah. V5N2R4. And then it starts at 8 sharp because, for goodness sake, it's Monday. let's get some laughs in and get home at a reasonable hour because get serious.
Wait, I thought most Vancouver comedy shows, they last way until like 1 a.m. Is
yeah.
that how it always works?
There's a weird thing. This is, and I know you guys are trying to wrap it up. I'm going to put my hands in the air.
Waving like you just don't care.
I got a point to make here.
By the way, I'm going to be at that Prop House show this
Monday. Yeah. And Ian, this one, no matter when you hear this, Ian will be coming up the upcoming week.
I might just be looking in the window.
Yeah. And then, so people do this thing where they'll promote a show, and it doesn't matter, comedy, poetry, music, or whatever. And then there are not as many people show up as they think should, but there's people there. And they're like, let's hold it to see if it fills up a little bit more. And you're like, you're punishing the people who actually came to see the show.
Speaking of the code, you know what you're saying about if you don't have the rules and do the rules and just go with the rule breakers, then it's fucking chaos. Yeah, it drives me mad.
So rather than punish like those people who showed up first, punish the people who showed up late by having them miss half the show.
Yeah. I always start our shows on time, and we always get the Vancouver stragglers who are coming in like, hey, what's going on? The show be starting like 50 minutes late. Like, it's not a show. Then the show go on forever?
Yeah. it's perpetually on the show.
Aren't there 75 people on the bill tonight that I can see everyone do that?
I feel like you're doing an impression of someone specific.
No, I'm doing an impression of my head every time I'm there, and like comedian number 11 is on. It's like, that Facebook sure is something. plenty of fish. Yeah, that dating site.
But yeah, and it's run with a good friend of yours and mine, Dylan Reimer. So I always he always does a set. This guy Shlomo McPeak, he almost always does a set, and then it's a rotating cast of other characters that we like. So and it's enough off the beaten path that no one would want to do it unless we asked. So we get to hand pick people who accept our invitations, if you know what I mean.
I do. It isn't. Fuck. I'm trying to think of the snake that eats its own tail and goes on forever.
Ouroboros.
It's not an Ouroboros show.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, we'll hedge our bets the person's not racist because we're picking from a smaller cross section. So it's easier.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing as a host of a show is when you host a comedy show, half the time I don't know the people who are even on it. Like my partner books it and then I'll be like, hey, here's like Jim Thomas or whatever. And Jim Thomas is just like, here's my opinion about the Jews. And then like my mom will be in the crowd and be like, why did you have that Jim guy on the show? And I'm like, I don't never met him. Right. So it reflects badly on me. So you just hedged your bets.
Pro rape, you say. Interesting. Okay.
That's not, you laugh. There were way,
because the audience isn't.
Way too many rape. You know, there's too many.
Yeah.
There's so many bad rape jokes that it cancels out any of the good ones. Like, I would just get rid of all the bad ones and good ones and just blank slate because it doesn't, there is a total misbalance of people have an articulate point to make about any subject matter. It's that thing where, in principle, I'll defend free speech. But in reality, 99% of the time in Canada, it's an asshole with their hate-filled comments that are trying to defend themselves.
Here's the thing that also kills me. Whenever it is, it's these marathon shows that are not raising any money for the orphans. But it just goes on forever. And I'm like, okay.
Like this podcast?
Yeah. Now, here's the guy.
You can edit it, you know. There's technology.
He's a guy who's going up. You can learn that in school. They teach that in school now. You got the guy, and he's doing his rape jokes, right? And they're not going over. And I'm like, okay. And he's getting a little angry at the crowd. Now, I could see him being slightly surprised.
You can say it was Ian. You can say it was me.
Okay. But if the previous, and I'm not making this up, three other fucking comics who had gone on before him, who had done their rape material and got icy fucking silence, if he had, like, were you watching them?
Yeah.
Look, read the goddamn room. Even if you're making even if you got that joke, look at how it's playing. Okay, well, you can't be surprised. Or just like, don't juice it up and put a little twist on it. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. I don't care about, like, first of all, yeah,
juicy rape jokes.
You shouldn't be the pro rape. That's bad. But you're just being lazy. That's the thing that bugs me the most, is now you're the lazy rape comic.
Yeah.
So boo on you, sir.
So what you're saying right now is that rape jokes are the shock joke du jour.
They're not even shocking, no, though. They're the hack.
It's
shock.
It's not even a hack. It's an entitled white man joke. Like, that's who's telling it, you know, mostly. Like,
you can't really do the racial jokes.
Yeah.
It's weird, actually, with the comedy festival being here in town, I saw some comics come up from the States and they do like a racial joke, which, you know, in the States gets a certain reaction, and then they get mad at the crowd for not laughing. And just like,
All right. And I got to say this quick, and this is something I know we're running late. I'm holding my hands up.
Everyone, we're joined today by Ben Jazzhand Mills.
Jazzing it up. I love jazz too. This is my, really? Yeah, I do love jazz too. Like, yeah, a lot of Americana I know about. But this is my breakdown on why, you know, middle class white guys get up on stage and then shit on women, even though I have really no right to do so, is because when you're a white guy growing up middle class, and I'll let you know, podcast listeners, I'm white. I wasn't poor. I wasn't rich when I grew up. Right in the middle. And all of the media and everything you listen to, there wasn't cool things, at least like this, which was like freelance podcast kind of stuff, but TV shows and whatnot, there was usually a male lead and he won things. That was his whole life, was he was just a victor, you know, like he just would be victorious, right? And it was just sort of like, I solved a task and I won the love of a woman or whatever, or I'm in a board game commercial and I beat my family, or like, I always win the cereal. I'm a little kid, I'm a boy. And then so you're just in this culture of winning shit all the time. And then I thought the hardest decision I would face as a young man would be picking between like the hot, busty cheerleader type or like the sort of cute down home, like neighborly type, right? The girl next door.
The Ginger or Marianne.
Yeah, yeah,
the
right.
Betty or the Veronica.
The girl next door and the hot babe, right? Then I get to university. We don't even have cheerleaders. And then all my neighbors are old people. And I was like, what the fuck happened to my predetermined destiny that I've been promised? And I was bitter and angry. But then eventually, like, I was like,
after you'd raped enough women.
Good
you
Lord.
Were fine.
Good Lord, Dave. I was making a genuine point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's where it comes from. And then so these guys are like, oh, like, something must be wrong. And that's the angle they take. And so you get like 20 or 21-year-old guys who are bitter because of this entitled life that they are promised they didn't have delivered. And then they take it out on stage. And then it detours cool women comedians from wanting to do it. And that's why it sucks. And people don't talk about it enough. And it's almost like this weird, you know, people are like, man, I really hate that man-woman stuff. You know, you've heard that a lot of younger people. Like, man, you know the kind of jokes I hate that? Like, hey, what's the difference between men and women stuff? But it's just like, maybe in the 80s, some misogynistic comedians like overdid comparing men to women. But we have barely talked about the way society treats men and women different in stand-up comedy. And nobody wants to hear it. So it sucks. So that's why I think that like rape jokes on top of not even being funny are keeping you as a comedy fan from hearing better material and seeing better comedians.
I'm going to agree with that. I'm going to parallel a thing here, which is I think again going with my lazy idea. You know, like as a stand up, you're going to do a bit and you're going to go out there and you're going to do a bit and some of your stuff is not going to go over well and you're going to get silent. And I think a lot of people can't take the silence. So they don't want to work on, like, if you want to be a good comic, you got to work on the fucking long haul. You got to work to a lot of silent shit, you know, and that hurts more than an audience booing, because an audience booing you, oh, you're offended, hey?
Right,
you know,
right.
They would prefer to have the anger of the audience. It's like a kid who wants any attention but can't take silence. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you really want to be a comic, you got to take the fucking silence and do the material that's hard and go up there and not get a lot of it, you know, that. But yeah, by bringing up rape, you're going to get some sort of reaction. And some reaction is better than no reaction. And so that's what I see when I see them. I go, well, you're just being fucking lazy. Because a lot of times you're attaching this to something that doesn't have to do with rape. This joke could go a different direction. But you want to put this on so when it doesn't go, you can go to the audience, well, I guess you're offended.
Yeah, you put a little bit of distance between
I'm the bad boy. I'm the fucking bad boy. And then you get to run that narrative into your head. It's just like, they just don't fucking, bunch of, fucking up tight.
People are just like, man, I want to be edgy, edge. I'm like, hey, you know what I like? Round, well-rounded ideas, you know, with a beginning and a middle and an end that have a point and like help like, make people want to come to comedy, you know?
Yeah, and this is hard. And if you really want to do this, you're going to face a lot of silence. You got to like, you got to eat it.
And the thing is that the comedians that people like that do edgy material like that, they also are like, they make the audience like them first. Like if the audience hates you at the end, you didn't win. Like even if you're like, I'm doing this edgy shit, they don't get it yet. And I'm like, that's also what somebody says when they lost mostly, right? Like, yeah, you can be like, maybe I'm in that like 1% where I'm really a genius, but chances are they don't like you because you're a shitty person. And they saw that in you when you went there up on stage. But I just want to get more like artist smart comedian types. And I feel that like jockey, chachi, shitty misogynistic attitudes deter people who want to do that, because I think that's what comedy is. So it's not just a matter of what your tastes are. It's like you're ruining what should be an art form that's beautiful with like just hatred that we're kind of casual about, because I don't know why. I don't know why we're so, if someone is just racist, people will call them out on that at least because it's obvious. But if you're misogynistic, it's just like, there's nothing. Nothing said about it at a comedy show, you know?
Yeah.
Like you can just use any slur against women and nobody's ever going to say anything about it.
It's so weird because in stand-up you use so many broad stereotypes. Like I fucking hate commercials. No, you don't. You don't fucking hate commercials. But you've got to have some momentum to this bit you're about to do. How about the fucking dead of these guys? You know? So yeah. So if you're making anything up about, you know, the sexes, yeah, it's going to probably go too far, especially if you're an amateur, which is most of what we're watching at this point. And yeah, it just goes too far. And then people learn from that. And but the weird thing is you look at someone like a Louis C.K. who you go, there's an edgy guy. This guy talks about this, that, and whatever. And you can either pick it up one of two ways. You can go, look at the stuff he talks about. He talks about rape. Yeah. And he also like talks a lot about himself, and there's empathy in what he's saying.
Yeah.
And why don't you listen to what the whole message of what he's saying is? But they go, no, see? He says this, and he called that person a cunt in the audience. I was like, yeah, but look at the context and how it goes, and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
You know, they miss the big picture and just pick up on the small.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But, I mean, that's what I was saying, whereas, like, honestly, like, for, you know, and say that's a guy like Louis C.K. maybe has some great rape jokes, but I'd sooner just never have heard them to have never heard any at all, personally. Yeah. Like, I'm at a point now where I'm like, nope, the bad is, like, 100 to the one good, and I don't give a shit, and I want to be able to bring, like, a female friend to a comedy show and have her feel safe and comfortable there. And I think just like, I think we can maybe like bro it down a notch as a, you know, a culture of male stand-up comedians, and especially freaking like, you know, like a 21-year-old white guy from the fucking suburbs, like, no, give me a break.
Yeah.
Like you're so entitled, it's ignorant to just be like dispelling, you know, this thing out. You don't even know. You can't even walk a mile in somebody's shoes and you're cutting, you're like, you know who needs to get cut down a peg? Victims of sexual assault. Yeah. You know?
It's like, again, sorry, I know we're trying to wrap up, but I went to a show once at a local club, and like three separate comics had jokes about putting down midgets. First of all, that's not the word anymore. But also, really, that's your fucking target.
Yeah.
You are literally going after people that you can look down on, literally, that are smaller and weaker than you, that have a rougher time.
The most physically weak, visible minority that you could be picking on.
That's your damn target. Yeah. Three of you are going after this.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe that's the shock joke did you hear? Midgets. I mean, small little people, right?
Little people, yeah.
The thing is, we don't remember the shock people out of our culture. Just so you know, if you look through it, like, you know, if you just like the Jerry Springers don't live on in the history books. This historically, this doesn't happen. You know, if you want the people that we look back on who were maybe shocking comedians were, you know, your Richard Pryors or Lenny Bruce or whatnot, were anchored in the social consciousness that was way beyond the thing, just transcended the shock value.
Yeah,
but there's no, what was the name of that guy that had like the Jerry Springer of the 80s? Was it something Morton Downey Jr.? Morton Downey Jr., right? Yeah, there you go. That he resonated in culture, huh?
I was I'm sorry. And again, I know we were really trying to wrap it up, but I was talking to a comedian friend of mine. We were doing a show last week, and he was worried about being videotaped because he was like, you know, he didn't want his improv videotaped.
Okay.
You know, we live in a YouTube culture, and you get on there and you say the wrong thing. Now you're Michael Richards and you never work again. And I was thinking, like, I was saying to him, well, you got your Eddie Murphy, you got your Richard Pryor, you got your George Carlin, all of whom hosted children's TV shows, you know, in the 80s. You can't have anyone bluer than those guys. There's no one bluer. Look at Raw. He's now the donkey in Shrek. He's Dr. Doolittle. No one gives a damn. Everyone can. You know, even the edgiest becomes, you know, eventually comes around to the mainstream.
Yeah, we can compartmentalize. people and understand that they're more than just...
Yeah, shouldn't we strive towards some sense of greatness sometimes rather than just be this, like, you know, flash in the pan side note because he said some bullshit stuff against a minority? Like, good Lord.
I mean, that's what I try to do when I'm producing a show, too, is like, let's not make this shitty.
Yeah.
It seems like that's what you have to do. I'm not trying to shut down... I'm not trying to shut down your show. Yeah. You do your show.
Yeah.
You do the Rape and the Midget show over there. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Again, oh, it's little people. I'm really sorry. Yeah. You know, you do that. But we'll do a thing over here and we'll see which wins in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, this, if you go to crack.com, they have this thing where it's like top 10 hecklers, you know, being destroyed by stand-up comedians. 9 of the 10 stand-up comedians use a slur against women.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, wasn't even addressed. It was, oh, that was of no note. You know, it's just like, look, he really took her down a peg. Oh, God, our culture.
Yeah,
I get so angry, boys.
Here's what I think about them whenever I see those destroyed heckler destroy. I think, like, hey, there's a bouncer not doing their job. Because here's the thing. Come in, take them the fuck out. That's the end of that. When a guy jumps on stage at a concert, the it's not up to the singer to make up a new song about the guy there, you know, and how stupid he looks. It's like, guard, smashy face to ground, drag out. How about that in a comedy club?
Yeah.
Paul F. Tompkins had that at, like, Yuck Yucks. Like, he was getting heckled and, you know, for the longest time, like a couple of years ago, and he didn't want to come back to our town. That's Paul F. Tompkins.
Well, he's no good.
That's true. He isn't.
Oh, my God. Easily, I'm not going to lie, like, easily the best show live ever seen was Paul F. Tompkins at the Company House in Halifax.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was when he did when he was booking, if you get 200 people from 300 people from Facebook, and it was like Halifax had like the third. It's just nothing ever comes there.
Yeah.
It's like it's not even considered like a tertiary market. You know, it's like show business maps don't even have the Maritimes on them. So, and it was incredible. Yeah, it was really incredible.
So. I saw him here twice doing the same thing with the 300.
Yeah, yeah. What a great idea. Yeah,
it is a great idea.
I got to see Marie Bamford this week, who was also amazing. And just this was fantastic. Something, and I understand this probably was set up ahead of time, as in, like, at the end, give me the red light so I know when it's time to wrap up. But she was getting into some really dark, amazing stuff about suicide. And, like, you know, she was, like, talking about the time she was going to kill herself. And then she gets the red light. And I'm like, no, there's no fucking way you're giving her the red light on this. No, this is completely, this is probably, she probably asked for it. She probably said, just let me know.
Yeah.
But it was a really weird.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
The person with the red light, he's gone through some emotional trouble himself, so he just is a bit too raw for him. You know what? I think you should stop, Marie.
Yeah, just like, link, I link, can't link. Take it. I'm link. Breaking up inside here. Gee, those are link, link, seriously link. Probably what I would consider the two best stand-up comedians I've seen live. To be honest.
They're my two favorite stand-up comedians.
Yeah, I would say. Honestly, I all I care about with stand-up comedy is the live performance, because you can make anybody look good on TV. So, or like on a film, because you can pipe and laughs or edit it or whatnot.
Man,
so.
I wish I could think of a show that was shitty that.
Yeah, that did that. But even comedians that you like, you'll kind of be like, you're like, oh, they're fluffing this up a bit. And but then the live performance is what really makes things amazing. Yeah, Paul F. Tompkins and Maria Bamford are probably like tied for top place for comedians I've seen live a couple times each.
You see a show of theirs live and you go, oh, this was you only see this time. This was worth it. It's not like I'll just watch the video. No.
Yeah, no. They're like two of the kinds of comedians that do the exact opposite.
But also what I like about them is that you can share them with your fam. Like I took my probably then 15 or 16 year old daughter to Comedy Death Ray to see Paul F. Tompkins and Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
And it was great and she really enjoyed it too, you know. So because it's not rape jokes. It's not.
Yeah, it's
racist,
intelligent
nonsense.
Dialogue. They talk to you like an adult and maybe expand your mind slightly. Yeah.
And the same with the shows when you guys were doing shows together at the Cosmic Zoo. Those are shows I could take my daughters to as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
We used to do shows there.
Yeah, that's right. We do shows there. So, yeah.
But it was material that, even if it got a bit blue, I don't care about that myself.
Yeah.
Smart blue, yeah.
Yeah, if it's smart, I don't care. They've heard me swear. They drive with me in a car. Of course they've heard me swear.
So. Yeah, my parents used to let me watch Kids in the Hall when I was like a little kid. And it was like, because of this, the stuff that went over my head just went over my head. Mm-hmm. So
same
it didn't matter.
Me and Python. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, some, yeah.
And then once my mom walked in and went, what's with all the nudity? And like, that was the end of that.
Yeah.
So too bad for you.
I know. I liked the nudity. If you ever get a chance to see Paul F. Tompkins' show, that he does at the Largo in LA, it's amazing. Speaking of like a well-produced show with like music and, you know.
One of these days.
Yeah.
All right,
Dave,
folks.
Dave, we've been trying to wrap this up for about 45 minutes.
And I have been talking on and on, haven't I?
Yeah.
I've been a bit garrulous. a little verbose. I'm going to admit it.
Is there anything you want to mention, plug?
I would like to mention that the show is going to end in a minute.
Yeah, good okay. call.
Those of you that were thinking it was wrapping up and stayed on the treadmill, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
stayed
yeah.
so long.
They could see the little bar at the bottom. They like I heard it say, like, oh, we're going to wrap it up. And they're like, they were being optimistic.
Yeah, full of shit. Something happened. Something yeah. terrible happened. Okay, well, thanks so much, Dave. You're always a treat to work with. And great Thank having Ben on. Hope you come back again.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had a lot of fun, guys.
Unlike yeah. other local podcasts, we will have you back.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate All right. it.
You're listening to Sneaky Dragon. We're done. Thanks. Right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.